Bibles can turn to page 221 of the New Testament. Just before these verses, Paul has testified to the good news present in Jesus' death and resurrection. He now writes of the difference it makes for community of believers. Let us listen for what the Spirit is saying to us today. From now on, therefore, we regard no one from a human point of view. Even though we once knew Christ from a human point of view, we no longer know him. We know him no longer in that way. So if anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. All this is from God, who reconciled us himself through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting the message of reconciliation to us. So we are ambassadors for Christ, since God is making his appeal through us. We entreat you on behalf of Christ. Be reconciled to God. May God add understanding to our hearing of the word.
Do you ever worry that it's too late? I will confess that sometimes I do. Do you ever worry that maybe you or we collectively kind of had our chance and our chance is over? Sometimes I do. I think about the discourse that is so common these days where we have, the cliche nowadays is weaponized. I don't know about you, I can't watch a news broadcast or listen to a podcast without somebody using the word weaponized. That's kind of one of the new cliches these days. We have weaponized healthcare, history, fears, facts, faith, science, all kinds of things that we either can't talk to one another about because we've gotten into separate armed camps, or we can't talk about because we don't talk about things that make people upset, so we don't talk about these things. Is it too late to learn how to talk about things? I worry about that. I worry that it's too late. I do indeed. That we are busy not talking about things and yet still the ice shelf is falling apart, right? And if it's not too personal, I worry sometimes it's too late for me. I worry that I am who I am and that's all that I am. You ever think that? Does that ever happen with you? There are things about who I am that I think involve good gifts, that I treasure, that I hope I use well. But there are things about me, who I am, maybe this is true of you, that I don't think is so good. Certain habits, certain patterns, certain ways of being, and I worry that it's too late for them to change. To use another current cliche, I worry that they're baked in. You ever hear anybody say that? Ordinarily, I avoid cliches like the plague, but thank you for smiling. Yeah. But I'm concerned that there are things that I wish I could change, I wish would change, and yet I find that they haven't. I find that I still, as Paul says elsewhere, do the very things that I would not do, and the things that I really want to do somehow, sometimes, don't get done. Is it too late for me? And if you have some of these concerns, if you don't, God bless you, you can stop listening. But if you have some of these concerns, is it too late for you? Paul has this thing that he says to the Corinthians, that when someone is in Christ, there is a new creation. Something completely new, something completely different. He says that it means that everything old has passed away. The good stuff, all the different ways that we sought to impress people, to put a false front forward, or maybe even a true front to emphasize our best things, that has passed away. But also those things that are less than good. Those patterns, those habits, those behaviors are gone. The ways that we sought to impress, the ways that we sabotage those impressions, gone, erased, not counted. When one is in Christ. I was born into a church family. I was born into a Christian family. I was baptized. I was sprinkled as an infant. I was confirmed as a young teenager. I rededicated my life as an older teenager at a church that required me to be immersed. I received a call to ministry. I have been ordained. I have served the church for over 30 years. I have been in Christ. And yet sometimes I don't feel like a new creation. You ever feel that way? Ever feel like there are other aspects that just don't quite feel transformed? I have been in Christ, but not everything has passed away. Is it too late for me? Paul says these things, and then he says, he interjects actually a command, an imperative. See? We could translate it, look. The King James Version, you know, behold. We don't say that in our lives anymore, do we? We don't, when we walk in and see something interesting, we don't say, behold. But we know it in the Bible. We know that when angels appear, they say what? They say, behold, I bring you great tidings of good news. We know that prophets frequently say, behold. Jesus says, let those who have ears, let those who are receptive receive. Let those who have ears hear. Let those who have eyes. He doesn't put it exactly that way, but all of that. See? See? Everything has become new. Not just you, not just the person who is in Christ who is a new creation, but there is the potential for the renewal, indeed the reality of a renewal in everything. Not just in me, not just in you, but everything is renewed. I think especially how we see things. Paul says we once viewed Christ from, our translation says, from a human point of view. Literally, it's we once viewed Christ according to the flesh, according to our more base nature, right? Paul does not have as negative a view of the body as we sometimes think he does. He uses the body as an image for the church, for the resurrected Christ. But he says flesh when he wants to talk about the negative aspect of who we are as humans. I would say maybe that part of me that I wish were transformed and sometimes I worry isn't. We once viewed Christ, even Christ, according to the flesh. But we don't need to perceive things that way anymore. We don't need to see things through that filter that is our unredeemed self, our untransformed self. See? There is a new creation. That exclamation, that command, it makes me think of children. There is that age where children want you to pay attention to them, you know, that look at me kind of thing. It's just natural. It's just what they do. But there's also sometimes a way in which children are alert to things, I think, that we are not always seeing. One of my favorite stories about our granddaughter, Sydney, she was living with us in Sacramento. She was 2 or 3 years old. And we were going across the Sacramento River there. We're going across on a bridge, driving in the car. And all of a sudden she calls out, Mimi, Papa, look, rainbow. And that was just one of those little moments of blessing where she was paying attention to something that mattered to her, something that was beautiful to her. And she called that out. There is that childlike perspective sometimes that is open to beauty, and we're just driving the car. We can say that Paul is asking us to see, to look. We can say that he's saying, behold, which is really kind of a King James version of saying, pay attention. Pay attention. I wrestle with that language a little bit every now and then. I think, oh, is it really that transactional? Does it cost us something to pay attention? But you know what it does? To pay attention to what matters, to be alert to what matters, to be open and aware to the things that are important does require us to look away from some other things. There are choices that we make. We pay attention. We spend our attention in the ways that are appropriate. There is a cost, and there is a reward. And I think it's not unfair to suggest that there may be a greater cost to not paying attention, to missing the things that matter, the things that are important, or to allowing our difficulty with those discussions, with those issues, with those matters where we might have some division, some disagreement, to silence us on the important things. There may be a greater cost. See, look, behold, pay attention. Everything has been made new. You are a new creation. If anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. He or she is a new creation. And see, everything can be perceived as new, as transformed, as redeemed. Paul says that all this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. All this is from God. I think in some ways it's another way of saying that it's not about me. It's not about my ability to transform myself, to change myself, or to change the world. It is about God. It is God's initiative in Christ, who is put forward to bridge the gap between us and God. That gap that inevitably shows up when we think that it's about us. And that example of God, that initiative of God, then becomes about us only in this sense that we have a mission to imitate God. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and has given us the mission of reconciliation. Frankly, when Paul says us here, he means himself. He means himself and the people working with him, but I think it expands to all believers. It expands to all Christians. That God is a God of reconciliation, of putting back together that which has become separated, of mending that which is broken. And that we then have the purpose, the mission of imitating God's character. I suspect Paul was primarily concerned with that God and human gap. But we can think about our own gaps. We can think about our own divisions, our own particular human to human, group to group need for reconciliation. We find it elsewhere more explicitly. Christ has made two groups one and has broken down the dividing wall between us that he might reconcile both groups to God through the cross. The reconciliation that happens between us and God is also connected, interwoven, inseparable from the need for reconciliation amongst ourselves, between ourselves. And we should note that this passage from Ephesians is not just about, so-and-so doesn't get along with so-and-so. So-and-so can't talk to so-and-so's brother-in-law. It's not just individuals, it is group issues. two groups. The letter is specifically talking about Jews and non-Jews, Jews and Greeks, but that it is an ethnic division, a religious division, speaks to, I think, our own needs. It has individual aspects, but it has systemic aspects as well. Being reconciled to God in the same way that the great commandment, the love of God, the reconciliation to God is connected to our reconciliation with one another, in the same way that our love of God, our fulfillment of the great commandment, is connected to love of neighbor. They are inseparable. When we love our neighbor, we are loving God. I have said before, I believe this. When an atheist loves her neighbor, she is loving the God she doesn't believe in. When we are reconciled to one another, when we find that way to bridge a gap because God has set the example in Jesus Christ, not because we're trying to struggle and work it out and wrestle it down on our own, but because we've submitted to the example of God, when we find that reconciliation with one another, we are in some manner reconciled to God. Any gap is at least in part a God gap. And all reconciliation, potentially, is godly. So I believe, when Paul says at the end of our passage as we read it, be reconciled to God, that is clearly his desire to see that the church at Corinth, to see that the Christians that he's writing to find that place in their lives where God has already reached out to them in the person and the presence and the purpose of Jesus Christ. And to find that reconciliation, to find that place of peace, that place of purpose that is ours in Christ. But I believe that it's also an exhortation to find that reconciliation with one another. When one is in Christ, she is a new creation. He is a new creation. And everything has been made new. It is that God-initiated shift away from self to a new point of view. See? A new point of view on one another, a new point of view on God, a new point of view on the things that keep us separate from one another and from God. To be in Christ, I believe, is to find that lens where we can look at one another and the things that keep us divided, and see beyond, see beneath the disagreement. See the understandable emotion that may lie beneath somebody else's disagreeableness. The fear, the need, the humanity. To see that other people, so much of our dialogue has become apocalyptic. It's not just that somebody disagrees with me, it's that they're trying to destroy Western civilization, right? And if you haven't heard about that, it's because you're probably not reading the wrong materials. But that kind of language is out there. What if we saw the sincere desire that undergirds the point of view with which we disagree, right? That somebody may view something. I knew a man named Bud. Bud was a member of previous church. Bud and I disagreed on a lot of things, but I always knew that he was sincere in his belief, that he wanted what was best in this world. I was never able to say of him, he wants to destroy other people. He wants to destroy all that matters. Because I knew it wasn't true. And part of the reason I knew it wasn't true of him was because we were both in Christ. And I think he accorded me the same sincerity, even when we disagreed, even when we weren't sure that we could come together on a particular issue. Everything in Christ has been made new. It's all there. It's a done deal. Everything. See?
Make us one.